Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello there, everyone, and welcome again to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the tech editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. And as he often does on these occasions, sitting across from me is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Buongiorno.
All right, then. So let's talk politics.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what we normally talk about here
right,
on Tech Stuff.
Tech Stuff is all about the politics, and we're not talking PC versus Mac people, although we could talk PC versus Mac people. I mean, I don't have any research on it, but I like John Hodgman. And
well, frankly, that's sort of a political topic too.
But, right. But
it's not what we had in mind.
We're really looking at, all right. So the web is a global entity.
Yep.
Okay. So we're talking about the web is all over the world, and there are web companies that have a presence now all over the world.
Absolutely.
The web has really made it a lot easier to become a multinational global organization. Back in the good old days of the 80s, you pretty much had to be a mega corporation to have any sort of presence outside of your country of origin. You might have a few sites in another country, but it was only a few companies that really had a global presence. Well, now with the web, everyone kind of has a global presence,
whether they like it or not.
Right. And some of these companies don't like it. We'll get to that. But part of the flip side of the coin of having a global presence mm-hmm. is having to deal with global politics. And not every country treats the web the same way that we in the West do. Now, nope. I say we because I live in the United States. So that's really where my frame of reference is the way the United States handles the internet and the web.
Actually, not even all Western nations handle internet
that's
the same
true.
Way.
That's true. So companies that have a presence in various countries, especially anyone that is trying to generate revenue in these countries, they may find that they have to operate under a different set of parameters than they had originally intended. And in some cases, this comes into direct conflict with the company's philosophy. And I wasn't sure about all the different things you wanted to talk about, but I figured the bulk of this conversation would really center around Google and China, because it's a great example of how a multi national company can have some problems within one single country, and what could lead to it deciding to no longer do business there?
Now, just as a bit of clarification, especially for those of you who are catching up on our podcast now, a lot of you like to, you know, when you first tune in, go back and listen to earlier episodes. So as we are recording this, we're actually in the throes of conversation about what has happened over the past few days in our time with an attack on Google's servers. Apparently, it just came out today, the day we are recording this, that the attack came from a computer in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And what happened was emails containing PDF attachments went out to people from many different organizations. There are apparently about 33 different companies, including Google, where individuals received emails with these PDF attachments. Well, the PDFs were exploiting a zero-day vulnerability, which means unpatched, basically, a hole in the back of the Adobe Acrobat reader code.
Mm-hmm.
And what that allowed the attackers to do was essentially reroute traffic from the affected computers with a Trojan, what they call a Trojan horse. It appears as one thing, in this case a PDF, but contains malware. They were able to take intellectual property from, in this case, and what we're talking about mainly, Google and the Gmail servers. Now, it affected a lot of people, obviously, but Google has been the most outspoken as of this date, and said, look, as a result of this, we are not going to comply with the censorship requirements that the Chinese government has put on us, which is causing a great brouhaha in countries all over the world right now.
Right. So to give a little more perspective, China does have some pretty strict restrictions on what the citizens of China can and cannot access.
That may be the biggest understatement you've spoken this year.
Yeah. All right. So China likes to keep a very firm grip on what the Chinese citizens are able. China, when I say China, I'm talking about the shorthand for Chinese government.
Yes.
So the Chinese government likes to keep a tight grip on what the citizens can access. So much so that there is the Great Firewall of China. It's something that we all refer to outside of China. The Great Firewall of China is this firewall that blocks incoming data that the Chinese government doesn't want citizens to access. This ranges from everything from pornography to anything that criticizes the politics and policies of the Chinese government, including things like its position on Tibet.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that are just considered taboo within Chinese culture. That stuff is blocked. And then there's the stuff that the government just doesn't want citizens to have access to. That gets blocked too.
Yes, information like Tiananmen Square.
Right.
As often filtered out.
Oh, yeah. That's a huge one. And
yes.
So go ahead.
I wanted to point out, though, just as a point of clarification, that the person who wrote this actually came out on Google's blog. It was mm-hmm. written by David Drummond, who is the senior vice president of corporate development and the chief legal officer of Google. And he pointed out, we don't know whether or not the Chinese government is actually involved with this. There's no way to tell.
Right.
For sure, who was the attacker in this case?
Yeah, but if you read between the lines, it is essentially saying that we can't be certain, but we're, I would say that the reasonable interpretation of reading any of the reports suggests that ultimately the Chinese government had something to do with these attacks.
Well, put it this way. We haven't mentioned – I just realized we haven't mentioned one of the things that might lead them to believe that.
Oh, what the information was?
Yes. The information actually – the hackers were targeting accounts of Chinese – known Chinese dissidents.
Yeah. People who were advocating for human rights within China, it was their information. And as far as we can tell, it wasn't like their emails or their documents or anything. It was more just who they were and, you know, where they were really.
Well,
bad enough.
So it could have been somebody who wanted to make it appear as though the Chinese government was behind it.
But what motive
would they
have? But
it also could have been the Chinese government itself.
What motive would anyone have to frame the Chinese government? Why would they need that information? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
I think it was Lafarge.
Oh, was it?
He's notorious like that.
All right, I'm going to take a little moment here and think about pie.
Okay.
So I wanted to mention here about the whole Google China event. Google going into China in the first place was kind of a sticky situation. Mm-hmm. The reason being is that Google has an informal motto that says, don't be evil. All right. Mm-hmm. And they define that motto within their investor relations page as meaning a couple of different things. One of the things they mean is that they want to provide their customers with unbiased information. So when you put in a search result in Google, you should get unbiased search results.
Right.
You shouldn't be getting, these are the ones that Google thinks are best, or they have a deal with this company, and so their search results are going to come back to you, and other search results from competing companies won't come back to you. That is against Google's policy. So you should, whenever you put in a search query, you should get unbiased information in return. Their second tenet in Don't Be Evil is to operate within the boundaries of the law.
Right.
So Google can't do something that's illegal, even if they think that this is quote unquote right. They wouldn't do it because it's against the law. Instead, they would lobby to have the law changed. They would work, in a legal manner to have whatever it was removed so that they could operate the way they wanted to.
Yes. Now, and David Drummond has actually made that clear that as of the date we're recording this, Google wants to work with the Chinese government to find a way that it can deliver search results in China without censoring the material.
Right. Well, that was the point, was that back when Google first got into China, those two tenets of don't be evil were at odds with each other.
Yes.
Because they could not provide unbiased information to customers in China and operate within the parameters of the law. The two things were at odds. There was no way you could do both at the same time. You could either do it illegally, where you're providing uncensored search results, which would just mean that the Chinese would eventually filter out your site and no one would have access to it anyway, or you would have to play ball with the Chinese government and filter your search results to remove any links to things that the Chinese government deemed inappropriate for the citizens to see. So there was no way that they could follow their own motto by going into business in China. But at the same time, they said, we think that being able to provide some information is better than not being able to provide any information. So we're willing to take a chance and operate within China, see what happens. And if the situation goes for the worse, then we will reevaluate our position within China. And that's kind of what seems to have happened over this past week.
And it should be pointed out, too, that China is not exactly a small market for internet users.
No, there are. At one report I saw states that there are around 350 million people who use the web on a regular basis in China, and that number is growing.
Yes.
And that's actually getting to the point where it's eclipsing the United States.
It's no small market.
No.
So it's going to be hard for people like Microsoft and Yahoo and Google walk away and ignore them.
Now, on the flip side of that coin, you could argue that Google itself is not a big player within the search engine space in China, which is true. Now, in the United States, Google has the majority of the market share in search.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like 60-something percent. It's crazy amount of considering how many companies are out there that provide search.
Right, right.
In China, it is, I think, in third or fourth place. Mm-hmm. There's a Chinese government.
It's an organization that is friendly with the Chinese government. I'm not sure that it is state-sponsored.
Right, but okay. There's a search engine that within China.
It's cooperative.
Yes, cooperative with the government that is in the number one space.
Which is called Baidu.
Right. So Baidu is number one in China. Google is trailing behind Baidu.
But is catching up. I have seen reports that it has made up some ground.
However, some people have pointed out that since Google isn't the number one, they don't have the same kind of stock in China that they would in other countries. It's easier for them to pull up stakes and leave, because they're not abandoning a huge market the way they would be if they were in the United States. So the question is, if Google were the number one search engine in China and this had happened, would Google still make the same move of saying, you know what, you have violated our trust. We weren't really sure about this situation in the first place when we came in here. We're going to leave. Would they be able to do that if they were number one? Would they be able to say goodbye to all that money? Part of that question is hard to answer just because Google has to answer to shareholders.
Yes.
And shareholders as a whole, I don't mean to paint all shareholders with the same brush because I know it's not the case. But there's kind of a general rule of thumb, which is that shareholders are willing to put up with a lot if it means that they're going to get a return on their investment.
Yes.
And that may even mean saying, you know what? I understand that this violates principles that you hold dear, but at the same time, we're making lots of money.
Yeah.
So as long as we're able to make that money, we will, you know, just kind of look the other way on the whole human rights issues and censorship issues. I don't know if Google would have been able to walk away. And Google, let me be clear, at the time we're recording this, Google hasn't walked away yet.
Not yet.
But they have said that they are willing to pull up stakes and leave the country if they are not able to come to some sort of agreement with the Chinese government. And the Chinese government, for its part, so far has said, we're not in the wrong here. We have these rules. Google, you either obey these rules or you don't work within our country. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a standoff right now. We have to see whether or not Google is going to make good on its threat to leave. I'm very curious to see how this affects the landscape in China if Google were to leave, and actually the global landscape, really, when you think about it.
Well, there was an article in the New York Times, too, that it's very, very curious because the Chinese people are aware that something is going on with Google, but they are unaware that it revolves around any arguments surrounding free speech.
Sure. Well, that's what happens when your speech is controlled.
Right, right. But there has been an outpouring of sympathy for Google. People have been coming to the headquarters in Beijing and leaving flowers and candles and other mementos. So, you know, just all kinds of people have been dropping by, which is not something that I would necessarily expect to see for the third or fourth place, search engine in China. I have the feeling that some people may know more than they may be letting on.
Well, it is known that there are plenty of people in China who are using various services to get around the firewall and are accessing information that is verboten in China.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people who are using proxy servers and things like that in order to get access to more information than they otherwise would be allowed to see. So some of that might be coming into play. It's kind of hard to say without being there and knowing the whole situation. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't, for instance, we don't know if Google's motives are really pure. We don't know if Google has been looking for a while to get out of China, and this latest incident is kind of acting as a springboard so that they can, it's kind of like
an excuse.
Yeah. It's like an unforeseen exit strategy. Like, oh, yay, let's take this opportunity to get the heck out of Dodge. We don't know if other companies are going to follow suit. I mean, one thing about Google leaving China is right now it's like the best move they can make because they are not number one. They're not going to lose a huge amount of revenue by getting out of China right now. But they are going to get a huge PR boost by saying, look, we're going to do what's right because we either want to provide uncensored search results or we don't want to work there at all. That's like a really nice high moral ground that you can cling to. And whether or not it's genuine is kind of beside the point. It's a huge PR win for Google. So it puts pressure on other American companies and other international companies like Yahoo and Microsoft, that still operate within China and are still operating under China's rules, saying like, well, now these companies have to ask the question, do we stay in China playing ball with the Chinese government, continuing to obey the rules of censorship and accept the fact that that's going to be awful PR back in the rest of the world. But we'll do it, you know, we'll make that sacrifice because there's all that money over there.
Right.
Or are they going to say, you know what, we're going to pull up stakes too because the heat is too high? Or maybe even they genuinely feel that the business they're doing in China is ultimately more harm than good. I don't want to paint all of these executives as being these cold-hearted, calculating, money-grubbing kind of jerks.
Yeah.
I don't know any of them personally. Some of them may feel legitimately conflicted about doing business in China. And maybe they are taking the time to really reevaluate their positions as well. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know. I operate under assumptions and stereotypes the way everyone else does. So I think of them as cold, calculating, money-grubbing jerks. But I hope I'm wrong. It would be great if I were wrong. Here's the real problem. Ultimately, I don't know, even if they were to all pull up stakes and leave, I don't know that would put any leverage on the Chinese government whatsoever to make any kind of changes.
It is conceivable that their argument that by doing work in China, they can gradually change the mind of the government to allow more free speech and allow more flexibility.
And we've seen some evidence of that over the last few years. I mean, that it's not like China hasn't allowed any kind of outside access.
Right.
But they have been very, very cautious of it. And some of that is cultural, where it's just that they want to protect the Chinese culture. And some of it is very political. And so it'll be – yeah. I mean, I think if even if all the American companies that have anything to do with intellectual property pulled out of China right now, I'm not sure that China would really care that much yet.
Yeah.
In some ways, Chinese government would want to react because it's all about saving face in the global environment.
Yeah.
So, but in, even in that case, it's more about saving face. It's not about necessarily doing what's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We know another situation, another political situation that involves technology that that revolves around protecting corporate interests was net neutrality.
Yes.
And I was reading just today that Skype has weighed in. There's still no decision on official decision on net neutrality, but Skype actually filed a brief with the FCC not too long ago, actually on January 14th, 2010, basically saying – sort of coming down somewhere in the middle, saying it would net neutrality would promote investment, jobs, and innovation. That's a quote. But Skype also sees the need to protect network infrastructure and for companies, internet service providers to throttle bandwidth, block programs if necessary, or degrade performance in order to preserve the network integrity and make sure that they're able to provide equitable service. Of course, they were also quick to point out that their application has been optimized to, you know, make as minimal an impact on the network as possible.
Right, because it's all peer-to-peer.
Right. So, you know, it's all sort of relative, but that battle has been hot and heated between the people who say, I want to be able to access everything equally here in the United States on my internet service provider. I don't care. I don't want it censored. I don't want it throttled. I don't want it blocked. I don't want it, you know, tapered off.
No preferential treatment for one versus the other.
Meanwhile, some of the internet service providers are saying, look, you know, if we can make a deal with a content provider, you know, to help provide better service for our customers as a whole, we're willing to give them a little bit extra bandwidth, you know, or we're going to throttle your
BitTorrent
connection because, you know, you are one of the 0.05% who uses most of our bandwidth because you download movies all the time.
You know. Maybe BitTorrent is not just used to download movies.
No, it can be used to download anything.
Right.
But you know, yeah, making an example, right. No, yeah, BitTorrent can be used to download anything, legal or illegal.
Yeah, the problem is
large
that,
or small.
The problem is that there are a lot of people who do use it for illegal purposes.
Sure.
And so that's
it gets a bad rap for that.
And you know what? I'm sure if I looked at the full list of all people who use BitTorrent, it would probably be a sizable percentage that uses it for illegal purposes, at least occasionally, if not regularly.
It's a very effective method for delivering files,
right,
whether they're legal or illegal.
But yeah, if you were to just automatically throttle all BitTorrent activity, then
exactly,
that would really hurt people who are using it for legitimate means.
Absolutely.
To distribute very large files.
Yes. I mean, if you were using it for work purposes in your house and you needed to share files with other people in your office,
yep,
you know, in your bandwidth is being throttled by somebody else who uses even more bandwidth than you, and you're being lumped in with them.
Sure.
You know, you're going to be a little outraged by that. I would think.
So we're seeing a lot of web companies weigh in on this discussion. So this is another good example of web companies in politics. I mean, Google has been extremely vocal in the whole net neutrality argument.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we've also seen ISPs and cell phone carriers in particular,
sure,
argue the opposite side, saying things like, hey, we just want to be able to give the best service and get lots of money and charge twice for the same content delivery system.
Again,
they're
also trying to provide value to their stockholders.
Yes.
And
stockholders are, as we have determined already, the most evil people on the planet.
Thank you very much.
I own stock, by the way. I also have plans for a Death Star.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but now that you mention it, yeah.
You know.
Okay.
No, I don't really mean that. don't really mean that stockholder is necessarily evil. Stockholder is not necessarily evil.
You're going to get emails.
They're
for
just
that.
Mostly evil. No, I really honestly don't believe that, but there are a lot of people who hold a lot of shares who do sacrifice, they'll make sacrifices on principles in order to make more money.
And there are people who abuse ISP networks too.
Right, sure. Absolutely. And then of course there are plenty of shareholders out there who argue for the other way. They argue that no, we need to do the responsible thing. And yes, it may mean that we don't earn as much in the short term, but in the long term, we'll make much larger returns on our investments. So it makes more sense for planning out years in advance. So unless you're planning on cacking it in the next couple of years and you're just looking for some money to blow on all the big parties you're going to have before you kick it in 2012, really not a big deal.
All right, then. Yeah, I don't really have any other political things that I was thinking of specifically.
We know we talked a lot about Google and China in particular, but that's
because it's
a big one right now. And it's a very good example of how a web company can encounter some really sticky situations once they enter into a country that has a totally different culture and political system than the one that spawned that company.
Well, actually, I was not to get into this in depth, but the other big political battle being fought is, you know, over intellectual property and copyright law.
Right.
And that's sort of what's going on. And it's not exactly the same thing, but it's sort of what's going on with the Chinese situation, because these things are new. The technologies have only been around for a couple decades, to the point where everyone has adopted them in large numbers. They're proposing new issues for governments to have to deal with. And, you know, I think there will be massive changes in government over time, but right now they are producing some serious thorny issues that have never had to be addressed before.
Yeah, and we can guarantee that we'll keep our eye on this situation. And if you guys want to hear us have discussions on really timely issues, like this podcast in particular is more about the general issues of web companies and politics, and we use the China Google thing as an example. But if you want to hear us talk more about this sort of stuff in a timely fashion, I highly recommend you check out Tech Stuff Live, which we do every week. It's on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern. And you can actually access the older episodes of Tech Stuff Live. There's a Ustream channel that archives all of them. You can also see our other live programs, archived versions of our live programs, not just Tech Stuff, but Stuff You Should Know, and there'll be others to follow in the future. So,
plus we write about these things too on our blogs.
Yes.
blogs.howstuffworks.com. And, you know, we're able to address those a little bit more timely fashion.
Right. So if you find these kind of discussions interesting, and if you want to participate in these discussions, we highly recommend you visit the blogs. There are areas to comment on the blogs, and, we definitely like to have that kind of involvement and that deep conversation start. Because clearly, I mean, we have our own opinions, but we know that all of you out there have your opinions. Some of you may have lived in countries like China and have a unique perspective on the issue, and you're probably screaming right now, I want to add my voice to the conversation. The blogs are a good place to do that. And, of course, you can always write us. You can email us at our wonderful email address, techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And we look forward to hearing from you. This has been an interesting discussion. It's one of the heavier topics that we've tackled.
Definitely.
But after talking about our favorite tech movies and Easter eggs, I felt that
we probably do.
Yeah, we were due for something that had a little more substance to it, I thought. Yeah. So definitely email us, check out our blogs, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.